Sam Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. He became famous for throwing a chair onto the court, but he won three national championships for Indiana's Hoosiers. As a coach, Bobby Knight has died at age 83. Ken Bickoff with Pigs.com, which covers Indiana sports.
Finished his career as the winningest coach of all time. It's a complicated legacy because it was one of success coupled with the obviously fiery temperament. It seemed like every year there was some kind of controversy on and off the court.
People with foreign passports have been allowed out of Gaza in a limited opening of a gate to Egypt. CBS's Tina Kraus reports that in northern Gaza, the Palestinian refugee camp that was hit with Israeli airstrikes yesterday has been hit again.
It was hit for a second time by Israeli airstrikes and sending Palestinian civilians in the area into outrage. They are again digging through the rubble with their bare hands, pulling out civilians, women, and children.
Public school teachers in Portland, Oregon are striking over issues including pay and class sizes. The school system says the union's proposal would lead to staff cuts. Teacher Venus Collar.
We've been at the bargaining table for over 9 months, and it feels like only recently the district has actually started to take us seriously.
Talks continue between SAG-AFTRA and the Hollywood Studios. Actors Union Chief Negotiator Duncan Crabtree Ireland.
We are still apart on some key issues, and we're working very hard to bridge those gaps, but we are not there yet. And our members know that they have to stand strong until this deal is done.
Donald Trump Jr. is the first member of his family to testify under oath in the civil fraud trial in New York involving the Trump Organization. The lawsuit centers on whether the former president and his business misled banks and insurers by inflating his net worth on the financial statements. They deny wrongdoing. CBS legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
Part of what the judge is going to look at is if there is a finding of liability with respect to the other adult children, then what will they be prevented from doing in the future? Will they be prevented from serving as executives in businesses located in New York, for instance?
CBS's Jim Crisula reports on a huge jury award in a case involving a popular garden product.
Bayer AG, the owner of Monsanto, has been ordered by a Southern California jury to pay a 57-year-old man $332 million. Michael Dennis had claimed he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma after using Monsanto's Roundup for 35 years as a land surveyor. Monsanto says its lucrative product will be off store shelves by the end of 2023.
Countries at a UK summit pledged to tackle AI's potentially catastrophic risks. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform. You need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is considering whether to hear a lawsuit to overturn the state's school choice program. WisPolitics reports conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley says the high court should have rejected the lawsuit. She says it's a policy matter for lawmakers to consider and not a matter for the courts. Chief Justice Annette Ziegler joined Bradley's dissent. Interested parties have until the 14th to weigh in. Open enrollment in the health insurance marketplace is underway. Democratic state lawmakers are reintroducing bills they say will make health care in Wisconsin better and more affordable. One bill would expand Badger Care eligibility for some people up to 133% of the federal poverty level. Another bill would create a Badger Care public option to buy health coverage on the state exchange. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Badgers getting ready to face the Hoosiers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers will be on the road this weekend to take on Indiana at Memorial Stadium. With a growing list of injuries, does that mean that opportunities for other players to get more playing time? Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
Yeah, there's potential for a lot of guys to get on the field in these final four games. Haven't played at all, you know, with the rule of, you know, allowing young guys that they got four games. So there could be some situations where we start to throw some guys in, maybe special teams.
NFL, the news sinking in here at Lambeau Field that defensive back Rasul Douglas is no longer in the building. The Packers traded him to the Bills for a third-round pick and essentially to take money off the salary cap for next next year. Jair Alexander asked, how did he find out the news?
I actually found out this morning coming into work, so I made sure I text him right away. I didn't expect Rasul to be gone. You know, he's a vet throughout his time here. It's just the NFL.
That's Packers defensive back Jair Alexander. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies overnight with lows around 26. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 45 tomorrow, 34 tomorrow night, mainly cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Henry Cutter, dude.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, welcome back. Aho, Hiraki, all of our friends and relatives in all four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We discuss local and national Native news and events here on Native Roots Radio. My name is Haley Cherry, or I guess my Ho-Chunk name is Chashap Ewangawe Neek, meaning Little Eagle Princess in Ho-Chunk Nation. And we have a very special guest host in with us today. Host Robert Pilot is out in Washington, D.C., so he's missing out on all of the fun, but we got a couple Ho-Chunk girls here in the station, in the studio here. So I want to go ahead and introduce Arvina Martin. Arvina is the executive director of Emerge Wisconsin. Arvina, hi, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And we always love having you on the air with us.
Yes, thank you for having me, Haley. And thank you in absentia to Robert for having me, inviting me to guest host in his absence. I know he's out there out in DC doing some good work for the people right now. So I'm happy to, to hold it down here for him so he can go out and take care of business.
Absolutely. And I just want to remind everyone too that this portion of the show is supported by JS Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue here in St. Paul, Minnesota. Native owned, bringing us the best coffee that keeps us awake. Robert loves the dark roast. I'm not much of a dark roast girl, I'll have to admit. I do like a lot of creamer in my coffee, but I don't know. What about you, Arvina?
Yeah, I actually prefer the cold brew. You know, it's a little less bitter, but still has that, you know, that oomph, that all that caffeine punch that I need when I'm working into the night trying to get things done.
Exactly. Well, what have you been up to? I know we just got through Halloween, and we've got Day of the Dead still going on here with the next couple of days here for our relatives in Mexico. And then also today is the first day. It is Native American Heritage Month here starting November 1st.
Happy Native American Heritage Month to you, Haley.
You as well. Thank and we're both you. Ho-Chunk, which is really cool.
Yes. I like to joke and call it Wangshuk Wednesday, even though Wangshuk includes people who are not Ho-Chunk. It doesn't alliterate the same way.
Right.
Ho-Chunk Wednesday.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have any big plans for events or anything during Native American Heritage Month, Haley?
Oh my goodness. You know, I have not checked the calendars yet, but we're lucky here in Minnesota. I know you're over in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We have a really great Native community here, especially urban in the Twin Cities. And there's always a bunch of events going on. So I'm sure someone will put together a big old calendar for all of us. And I'm sure, yeah, we'll be going to a lot of events.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same here. It's a matter of actually looking at my calendar and figuring out what it is I can make work in my schedule. There's a lot of stuff coming up that I have for work personally. So, you know, I want to be able to check out things in more places in Wisconsin other than just Madison, which is where I live. Hopefully I can check out some stuff in Milwaukee, maybe Baraboo, the Dells, you know, some other places as well, because I know, you know, we've got lots of Native communities here in Wisconsin, not just our 11 federally recognized tribes, but we have lots of local tribal communities in our more urban areas and on our campuses with our Native students. And I know that there's some stuff happening here in Madison. We're, you know, at our local Ho-Chunk Nation branch office, including some chances to learn how to do some Ho-Chunk arts and crafts, you know, whether it's doing beadwork. I learned how to do pahke making, which is very difficult, but pretty cool. And I don't know, I was thinking about maybe trying to pick up some basket making skills. I know that my family did that, you know, my grandma and her family used to sell baskets back in the day in order to make money. I don't know about your family, but
Well, I know there was someone that we've had on this show too. I'm totally blanking on her name. I don't want to say Trisha Zunker, but it might have been. I don't know. Does she make baskets? You know, Trisha?
Yeah, I don't know that she makes baskets. She might, but I know she's got an extensive collection of baskets.
Maybe that was it.
Yeah. I haven't seen her collection, but I've seen pictures. Actually, I think there were pictures of it when she was featured in Vogue a couple of years, you know, when she was running for Congress. And I saw there were pictures of her sitting in front of her collection. And I thought, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone in our family, mine and Robert's family, did baskets. But my Gaga and my great Gaga, Helen McKee, they're pretty known for their fry bread, I'll have to say.
Oh yeah, I can tell a story about during the pandemic. I am not known for my fry bread, but I am known to eat it, and I tried to make some with a friend of mine during the pandemic. You know, we were both safe, and it was nice outside, so I was like, I'm gonna make some fry bread, and my dough never rose,
and
found out later that the yeast that I had died. So I was very adamant that it was not my fault.
Yep.
But regardless, still get teased to this day for my lack of fry bread skills. It wasn't my fault. The little yeast guys, they just weren't doing their job.
I didn't know. So is that like expired, or they die, or is that the term for it?
They must have. This was when everybody was super into making sourdough bread. So, you know, everybody and their mom had gone to the grocery store, and like I had gone three different places and couldn't find any yeast anywhere. And then finally found some, and I was like, oh, yes. Then I'm gonna have some fry bread. And the worst part of it is, you know, not just the embarrassment of having my batch of fry bread not even get to the frying stage, but but then not having any fry bread to eat. And I was so had it in my head. Oh yeah, we're gonna eat fry bread today.
Mm-hmm. All that work for nothing.
Yep. Yep. I think we ordered pizza instead, because by then I was like, I'm not making anything. This isn't
working.
Well,
it was bread. It's some type of bread. Pizza.
You know, and, you know, it there was grease on it. So it was kind of similar.
Yeah.
But we are also, I from the weather update that I heard during our break, that you guys are pretty cold up there.
Oh yeah. Did you guys get snow yet over there?
We got dusting. It was like the little pellets of snow, and it only stayed on like the lawn, so like not on concrete or anything. But we got a little bit of that. Did you guys get snow too?
We did get snow. It was not last night, but the night before. So I guess before Halloween. And yeah, it was probably, you know, about in the evening. It was probably like 9 o'clock or so. It started flurrying. And I was like, oh, no, it's not going to stick to the ground. And it's just a light dusting. And then about an hour later, I look outside and it's like a half an inch of snow.
Oh, my goodness.
Covered the ground. So
you guys got more than we did down here.
Yes, that's
for sure. It never really covered the ground, but I will say that it got me in that I almost said Snoop mood, but it got me in soup mode. And so we had corn soup last night, which was amazing. And you know, I feel like this is the right time of year for soups and roasted vegetables. So you know, we were keeping warm with that.
I love that. Gotta have that good fall meals. We gotta take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And what do you want to talk about in this next segment here?
Hey, maybe we can talk a little bit more we should talk about Miss Buffy St. Marie.
Ooh, I'm down with that. Let's do it. All right, you guys are listening to Native Roots Radio Network, and this is I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this break.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Be a vaccinative. As the fall season continues, new COVID-19 variants threaten the health of not just you, but our elders as well. These new variants might even evade previous vaccines. That's why it's important to stay up to date. The newly authorized vaccines target current variants effectively and are FDA approved for ages 6 months and older. But there is an important note. These are the first COVID vaccines to be commercialized, which means there may be costs associated with them. Speak with your health insurer about your coverage before scheduling an appointment to avoid a surprise bill. For those without health insurance, help is available. Ask your health clinic about options or visit vaccines.gov for free locations. Getting vaccinated protects you from severe disease. Don't put yourself or elders at risk. So be a vaccinative and protect our community. You can visit vaccines.gov for free vaccine locations.
This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Temperatures are cooling off and fall migration is underway. Do you know what that means? Eagle viewing season is almost here, and the National Eagle Center is your headquarters for information and experiences. This winter, experience bald and golden eagles in the wild with an unforgettable expert-led field trip. Plan your private eagle habitat tour and learn where the best eagle viewing is with weekly eagle counts. Plus, you can visit the eagles at the center all season long. Plan your visit or experience today online at nationaleaglecenter.org.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This is producer Haley Cherry, Shashap Heywongoenik with you here. And with me, I'm with Arvina Martin, Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin, and Arvina's guest hosting for host Robert Pilot. And we're back. So Arvina, let's talk some Buffy St. Marie, shall we?
Yeah. So for those who may have not heard, I believe it's called The Fifth Estate, a program on Canada's version of, I almost said Canada, Canada's version of PBS did a whole documentary about Buffy St. Marie's origins and how she doesn't appear to have any Native ancestry. And it has proven to be quite the issue in Indian country these days. people, you know, kind of taking sides, you know, either pro or against. I know that she was adopted in a traditional way by a Cree family. I believe their last name was Piapot. I don't know how to pronounce that. So if I said that wrong, I apologize there. But, you know, it really leads into this conversation or that we keep having about who is Native, who is allowed to call yourself yourselves Natives, mm-hmm. And who, you know, what that means. And there's a lot of people that fall on very different ends of the spectrum. Haley, have you seen this conversation happening online too?
Yeah, you know, I've seen it not only just with Buffy, but you know, unfortunately, you know, with other people too. And you know, it's hard. And you know, it's hard especially because she was, you know, adopted into those traditions. And yeah, I don't know, the whole word like pretendian mm-hmm. is comes to mind, but you know, yeah. In that circumstance with Buffy, it's really, really hard. I mean, she's done so much work and advocated so much mm-hmm. for the Native communities. I mean, all her life. You know, I'm not too familiar with kind of her background and everything like that, but I probably, yeah, it's hard to say. So I really want to hear kind of more so your opinion on the whole situation.
Yeah, I know. You know, I. It's disappointing, to say the very least, I think, that, you know, she has presented herself in a way that is not consistent with the truth. you know, and if there was, you know, nuance to this, why wasn't that discussed, you know, so much earlier? I mean, I remember, I'm pretty sure I've seen, you know, records at my parents' house of hers, and she's won awards for her work, her recording career. I remember seeing her on Sesame Street nursing a baby. Wow. They were talking about, and they were talking about breastfeeding and feeding a baby, and she was nursing a baby, presumably her baby, I hope.
Mm-hmm. I would hope so.
Yeah. and thinking, oh, that was pretty cool. And you know, I do think that moment was a big deal for folks. But at the same time, there is this great sense of betrayal that folks have, that they believed in and went to bat for her and found out that she hadn't been completely truthful and was kind of trying to, you know, make excuses, etc. And that certainly doesn't help. But then we run into questions like, you know, well, if the family in that nation adopted her, you know, who are we to question, you know, that nation's sovereignty and who they want to call members of their community. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just, I think it brings up a lot of questions in terms of who gets to call themselves Native or Indigenous, and you know, what is what would be the proper place from someone who isn't, you know, born into a Native family, but adopted into them. You know, my dad was adopted by two Ho-Chunk families in our traditional ways. But he never referred to himself as Ho-Chunk, you know, like he sang and he was a member of the Medicine Lodge, but he, you know, people asked him, he told them he was Stockbridge Muncie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people asked him about his connections to Ho-Chunk, he would talk about his adopted families. And, you know, so he never ever considered himself a Ho-Chunk tribal member or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, does the idea and this is more of like a legal construct, does the idea and does the fact that tribes are supposed to be sovereign, you know, does that give them the ability, you know, presumably to decide who is going to be a tribal member? And can, does that go beyond just who is born into it? I mean, back in the day, things like that would happen and people would be adopted in, and but it's we're not in the same situation today. And I think that, you know, I feel like these days we can't throw a rock without hitting a pretendian. And I think that this one hurts a lot of members of our community, just because she has been so, you know, she has been so outspoken about issues that that Native communities face. And would she have been considered differently if she presented herself as an ally who spoke on these issues? You know, yeah. would she still have the same kind of level of fame or influence? You know, those are kind of thoughts that come through my head. I don't know.
Yeah. You make some really great points there, Arvina. And again, we're with Arvina Martin, who is guest hosting. She is the executive director for Emerge Wisconsin and an enrolled member of Ho-Chunk Nation. And we're talking Buffy St. Marie. And if, you know, a lot of people don't know who Buffy is, she's a musician and she's a older Native, or who has right? claimed to be exactly. Native American. Yeah, we're talking about that and how she was adopted into Native family. Don't know.
It's, oh, well, and I think it's weird too. I mean, like, you know, it certainly looks like she tanned her skin somehow.
She looks, you know, of some type of Italian descent or Native, you know, but
Yeah, and I wonder if there's like some fake tanning situations going on to that she's doing in order to kind of perpetuate. Yeah, exactly. And then that brings up all the ideas of, you know, despite all the amazing work that she's done, she's still perpetuating an idea and a stereotype of what Native people should look like. And, you know, I think, you know, Haley, we know, and I'm sure most of our listeners know, that Native people can look like lots of different people. And, and, you know, there are Natives that present Asian, or Natives that present white, or Natives that present Black. And that doesn't, you know, cancel out their indigeneity.
Exactly. You're exactly right, Arvina. And, you know, I personally myself will come out and say that I struggled a little bit with Native identity. I don't know. We talk about blood quantum. That's a term that comes up a lot. Within Native communities and how much Native blood someone has apparently will contribute to their identity, I guess. But one thing that Robert has always told me, as long as you know personally who you are, who your family is, and you can name your family members of these enrolled First Nations, and you can prove your direct descent, that's all that matters. And no one can take that away from you.
You're exactly right, Haley. And I see, you know, especially with younger folks that have not grown up around their tribal communities, you know, kind of struggling with their identity and their place within their tribe or within the Native community at large. And, you know, I think that even that people that fake this kind of identity makes it so much harder for especially our brothers and sisters who are returning to their tribal communities after, you know, not growing up and, you know, having that identity or you know, their ways taken from them before they were even born through no fault of their own. And, you know, that it makes it so much harder for, you know, younger folks that are trying to come back and trying to learn their ways. You know, they get met with skeptical eyes. And that's, I think that's a huge problem. And, you know, that's why this, I think this issue of pretendianism, a word I just kind of made up right there, is so harmful. I mean, there, we can go in and talk about all other kinds of reasons why it's harmful, but I think that that one is kind of a...
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Former Indiana University basketball coach Bobby Knight has died at 83. He led the Hoosiers to 3 national championships and was known for his temper. Ken Bickoff with Pigs.com.
Part of his biggest legacy is just showing that you don't need the most talent on the court to be successful if you coach the talent you have to get the maximum out of them.
For the first time in weeks, the Rafah gate that borders Egypt was opened so some could leave war-torn Gaza, CBS's Tina Kraus reports.
For 3.5 weeks, that crossing between Gaza and Egypt has been blocked. These are foreign passport holders who were allowed to leave. How many will be able to leave in the coming days is still unclear.
Portland, Oregon public school teachers are now on strike, affecting more than 45,000 students. Issues include pay and class size. Venus Caller is a first grade instructor.
We've been asking for help for a while. We've been asking for these supports, and now we're just saying it a little bit louder because our kids can't wait.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An inmate died at the Waupun State Prison on Monday. That's the third death at Waupun in 4 months. The Dodge County Medical Examiner says autopsy reports won't be ready for a couple of months. The Waupun prison has been in lockdown since March. The Journal Sentinel reports about 1,000 inmates have to stay in their cells around the clock. Families say they're concerned about health care at the prison. Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Annette Ziegler delivered the annual State of the Judiciary Address in Lake Geneva on Wednesday. The veteran conservative justice didn't spend much time addressing her clashes with the court's new liberal majority. Chief Ziegler instead focused on improving court security and mental health treatment options for offenders. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies overnight with lows around 26. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. High of 45 tomorrow, 34 tomorrow night, mainly cloudy. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a loose nation.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This is producer Haley Cherry. I'm here with Arvina Martin, who is the executive director of Emerge Wisconsin, and she is stepping up guest hosting for Robert Pilot while he is out in Washington, D.C. And I'll hand it over to you, Arvina.
Yeah, thank you, Haley. I'm really excited to talk with our next guest here. She is somebody that I worked with when I was on city council in Madison, Wisconsin. Her name is Heather Bailey, and she's the preservation planner for the city of Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Yeah. I'm really excited to have you here as a guest. And I was wondering if you could kind of start off and tell us a little bit about your work in preservation planning and how that kind of fits into historic preservation of native sites and cultures.
Yeah. So, I'm the preservation planner for the city of Madison, Wisconsin. And so that is more than just old houses, although a lot of it is old houses, as should not be a sort of profound statement to anyone. History didn't just start when the white people showed up. Madison has a long and diverse history that goes back to time immemorial. And so it's also including the Native American history that's, you know, within our jurisdiction, our city boundaries. So there are a lot of primarily archaeological sites within Madison. The number of sites that are all over the city, it was a site of long-term human habitation. The tribal history that's there, it's just everywhere. So the Landmarks Commission is involved with being the stewards on behalf of the city for preserving the cultural heritage of the Madison area. Now, having said that, I can speak pretty well to the historic buildings, but the archaeological sites, while that is underneath my purview to help be a steward of those sites, because that's my job, literally it's in writing, that's part of my job, but that's not necessarily my story to tell. So I need to be working with our tribal partners to make sure that we are making sure we are being good stewards of these sites and going about that in a way that is the way they want us to do that, as opposed to the way that we think is right. But also that the stories that we're telling them on the terms of the people whose heritage it is, not, well, I have studied this, or I'm a scholar, or I'm an expert, or whatever, and I've decided this is the story that we're going to tell. So there's a lot of working with people to make sure we're telling the best story that we can, and that we're being the best stewards that we can.
Yeah. And I, you know, for the listening audience, while I was on city council, I was also a member of the Landmarks Commission. So I got to work with Heather quite a bit on stuff. And yes, it is a lot of old houses, but I frequently found the other stuff where when we would talk about some of the sites a lot, a little more interesting, I guess, because I think I related to that more than, you know, 1800s construction of a certain kind of building, Tudor revival, et cetera. I'm just trying to remember some of these architectural names that I lived amongst for a while. So you have to work with lots of different stakeholders, and what, especially when you're working with Native historic preservation, can you tell us a little bit about those stakeholders, and there's so many moving parts to this, and it gets complicated.
It does get complicated. So, I mean, there's various levels of law. So there's federal laws related to the Antiquities Act and the National Historic Preservation Act. And so there's compliance with federal stuff when there's some type of federal nexus. There's also state laws. And so there's, particularly for the sites that are known human burial sites, and that's a lot of them in Madison, then there's state level compliance. But the way that the laws were written for state level compliance, they've recently had some additional level of notification and tribal involvement, but they're still not at the level that I think they should be at. But that's our minimum level of compliance. Most of what we call securing a request to disturb, so doing ground disturbing activities within the boundaries of an area that is a known human burial site. And mostly that process is notifying the state, and then the state has a threshold of when they involve the tribes. But for my experience, the vast majority of me just notifying the state, and they aren't necessarily involving the tribes because that's not required. I wanted us to be going at more than just the minimum level of compliance. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the base of what the city has to do. But the city can and should be doing more. And so, Arvina, when you were on the Landmarks Commission, that was wonderful discussion to be able to have a discussion amongst the Landmarks Commission, which also just highlights the point of if you're going to be doing any kind of work, but going to be doing historic preservation work, it can't just be people who look like me. We need diversity in the bodies of people who are making these decisions and having these discussions. And prior to you serving on the Landmarks Commission, I don't think we had someone to genuinely represent Native voices for the significant number of resources. I mean, we were doing tribal consultation, but that's different from the body that is the city's, you know, set of deciders for how they want to proceed. It changes it to have someone who is a tribal member, a part of the Landmarks Commission, to talk about how we are proceeding. It makes a big difference. Yes. And I was thinking about some of those project reviews that we did that involved ground disturbing activities and you engaging in that discussion and making it personal. I'm going to finish answering your question here in just a moment.
No, you're good.
But I'm already off on a side thing.
I love tangents.
That's good, because that's where I live. Some of those discussions, me telling a property owner, these are human burial sites, these are where people's families are buried. You saying, this is where my families are buried, and the reasons why that this is has such strong emotions, and your people being, you know, forcibly removed from these locations where their families are buried, and why this is important. And there was one particular hearing where that really threw the property owner. He had had that as very intellectual, you know, way up here, as opposed to the genuine human connection of, hey, these are people's families who are buried here, and we need to talk about the ways in which we are impacting these sites. That made it very real. I'm sorry I had to come at your emotional cost, but that was super powerful. And that made such an impact for that person to be like, oh yeah, maybe where I want to have my garage isn't as important. And maybe I really should have it, you know, way away from the mound site. Yes. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
But in terms of the way things work on the city level, we're constantly learning know better, do better. So there's lots of back and forth. And as we gather more information and try to figure out what we're doing and how we're doing it. Also, I lived in Tennessee for 20 years. And so I picked up a couple of idioms from there. There's a lot of fixing to get ready to in government work. And so I've got a lot of slow wheels of government going on. And I've got a lot of fixing to get ready to things, and I need to get to the final completion phase. One of the things we had started, Arvina, when you were on the Landmarks Commission, was maybe we should have a land acknowledgement at part of the opening script for Landmarks Commission, not as a checkbox and now we're good with being compliant with, you know, giving a shout out to that this is Ho-Chunk land, and then, you know, done, we don't have to do any more, but as a starting point to ground our discussions, to be like, hey, this is where we're at. And we came up with some initial language. You and I then went to WITRIC, Wisconsin Intertribal Repatriation the Committee, and to talk with all of the tribal partners. Primarily, I am working with the Ho-Chunk Nation Tribal Historic Preservation Office, Bill Quackenbush and his team, and they are amazing. I can't say enough good things. So primarily working with them, but rather than just going with the assumption of, well, we'll obviously always be working with the Ho-Chunk, is there anybody else we need to be talking with? The federal government, each of the federal agencies has a list of, here's the tribal partners you need to do consultation with. And I've done enough federal compliance stuff to know that different federal agencies have different lists. So rather than me going to the U.S. government to find out who we should talk with in terms of how we do compliance, who we do consultation with, I wanted to go to the tribes to say, who of you want to be involved in our consultation and process, because that seemed way more straightforward and common sense. And so we talked with them, we started the discussion. They said they would like to, talk some more. And then we were getting ready to do a survey of known archaeological sites in the city of Madison, which that project just wrapped up. And I mean, you and I went to talk with Wittrich, is that 2 years ago?
I think so, yeah.
Slow wheels of government. We just finished up that survey, got some really amazing information. I've already sent it on to Bill Quackenbush for his comments, but hopefully in the next couple of months, I will get things together enough where I can go back to Wittrich and say, hey, here's what we've got. Who would like to be involved with talking about, here's the sites that we are aware of. What sites do we need to be taking better care of and providing more protections on? And also, what kind of stories do we need to be telling here? Yeah.
Great point. It sounds like we're ready to go to a commercial here.
We definitely do. Yes, great. We are here with Heather Bailey, Preservation Planner of City of Madison, Wisconsin, and Arvina Martin, Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin, enrolled member of Ho-Chunk Nation, and producer Haley Cherry. And you are listening to Neighborhoods Radio Network Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
We are a loser nation.
In this critical time for Indian country, voting is crucial to protecting the land, water, and communities. Voting creates collective power in securing our planet's future amid climate chaos. Engage in personal conversations with loved ones to ensure they are making informed voting choices. Register to vote. And don't forget that 16 and 17-year-olds can pre-register to vote in Minnesota. NACDI is asking us to stand together and make voting a tradition. Go to NACDI.org to learn more and make your pledge to vote.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Bonjour, hello. My name is Wabin. I am an enrolled member of the White Earth Nation, descendant of the Navajo Nation, and co-chair of the Indigenous Employee Resource Group with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. MnDOT is hiring for a variety of positions from road maintenance to accounting and more. We offer great benefits. For more information or to set up a one-on-one resume and application assistance, visit mn.gov/careers or you can text or call 612-257-2388. 612-257-2388.
Hi, this is Philip Anthony, the host of the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. I interview many interesting people and listen to their thoughts on how they plan to better our community and to hear their opinions on current events. Join us and get in on the conversation. You can listen to my podcast, The Downright Upright Show with Philip Anthony, wherever you listen to podcasts or at am950radio.com. So come and join me and continue being fantabulous.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Hey, this is producer Haley Cherry, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio Network Presents I'm Awake. This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Ow! Ooh, we missed you, Arvina. I think I had you on mute, so that's
my
bad. But...
I was doing it, too.
I know. I saw you, big Pina Gigi. Thanks for participating.
I'm not an expert wolf howler yet, but I'll get there.
That's okay. Where are you? What clan are you?
I'm Warrior Clan, so don't come by it naturally.
No, we're Eagle Clan, so neither are Robert or I.
Well, thank you, Haley. And again, we are here with Heather Bailey, the preservation planner for the city of Madison, and someone who I worked quite a bit with when I was on city council in Madison. And this is a little different. Well, not a little different, but Heather, I'm sure you've heard about the Oshkosh situation and how there was a site found. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what happens when sites are found, because in Madison, we have a lot of sites that are already mapped. And you did talk about us mapping like that. That's not the best word, I guess, but mapping sites. And could you talk a little bit about what happens when, if there were something like that to happen in Madison, or what is the process that goes on when during construction site is found?
So yes, there's mapping of known sites, but those are as documented by primarily white archaeologists. So those are what are known to that set of folks. So that's the information that we have. So if there are ground disturbing activities in these places that have already been documented, then the state's requirement is that we have an archaeologist on site for archaeological monitoring. So looking to see if while they're doing the ground disturbing activity, if there is, and the technical term is inadvertent discovery. So they find something or sometimes someone. And then what do you do? Well, there's a full stop. there's a full stop. Then it goes to, they have to determine if they find human.
Stop. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, by full stop, you mean all the construction work stops.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then the site gets locked down so that there's no looting and no further desecration of the site. The first level is they have to get a forensic anthropologist to take a look to see, is this, are these historic remains or is this something recent? Because that can happen too. So if it's something recent, then this is turned over to the police. It's a criminal thing. If it's something historic, then the Office of the State Archaeologist is involved, but then the tribes are involved for what is going to happen with these human remains. And every tribe has different priorities because they are different people for what do you want to have happen. Some tribes want the human remains to remain where they are and have a capstone installed so that no further ground disturbing activity could impact those burial sites. Some people want them removed from a place that now has a lot of activity and therefore a lot of disturbance going on and taken to a place for reinterment. And then that's fine. Then we work with the tribes to make sure that that happens. But it's a case by case situation and it depends on who all is involved with this particular consultation for the ground disturbing activity. Now, again, with Madison has it's the site of long-term human habitation. There's the places where we think there's a higher likelihood of an inadvertent discovery, but it could happen anywhere. It could happen anywhere. So we like to tell properties, particularly for properties that are up along the lakes, people want to live there now. People wanted to live there as long as there have been people here. So there's a good chance you're going to find something. And so we tell people, if you make an inadvertent discovery, you need to do a full stop. Contact us, contact the state so that this can happen. So that is the sort of level of what can happen in those situations.
Have you ever encountered in your career any inadvertent discoveries that then had to be handled?
Yes, I haven't done any since I've been in Madison. Before this, I worked with the city of Durango in Colorado, and we did have a project there because it's a site of long-term human habitation. Both the ancestral Pueblos and the Ute people, long-term habitation in that area. So there was a housing development in an area that was outside. We had similar mapping outside of the boundary of where we knew that there were sites, and they disturbed a couple of burials. So we ended up doing a collaboration with the tribes, and the state was involved, and they ended up, doing a reburial ceremony, and it slightly changed the shape of the development out there, but we worked with everybody to get to a solution.
Yeah. And do you think that, and this is your opinion as Heather Bailey, the person who works in this, and not as Heather Bailey, City of Madison employee, but do you think that in Wisconsin that there are sufficient rules? I'm like, or do you think that there's room for improvement?
I will say, to a certain extent, I'm speaking as a lifelong bureaucrat. I think there's always room for improvement and strengthening our processes and go back and reevaluate. I would say, as me practicing, I wish there was more of a regulatory structure that required. So, I mean, we're doing this as the City of Madison for, we want to go the extra mile. But that's us going the extra mile. There's, again, the base level requirement for all other municipalities, but they need to go access the mapping information, the GIS information for where burials are, but they have to pay for that. Or they can go down to a terminal in downtown Madison at the Wisconsin Historical Society to look at something. So it's counting on these governments to do that work. Mm-hmm. And if you turn somebody up, like what happened recently, then, you know, there are steps you need to take. But I think we have an obligation to be more proactive. And right now there isn't a requirement for doing proactive planning that is a way that is really involving tribal partners. I've heard Bill Quackenbush, have some comments about the ways in which we, the city, do processes that involve sensitive sites. The way in which our systems, and this is straight up systemic racism, the way our planning processes work, if we're doing some type of project, we notify property owners within 200 feet of the property. But because we forcibly remove the Ho-Chunk people, they don't have, they aren't legal property owners for these sites. So our processes, our planning processes in the city, it's not structured that way. So something like Landmarks Commission has to create an additional process to try to help make that happen. And that means there's been a lot of damage to cultural heritage for the Ho-Chunk people in the Madison area.
Well, I want to say thank you for all of the work that you have done and for being a progressive, forward-looking, also backward-looking and seeing where the mistakes have been made and really working on righting those wrongs. I was always very happy to work with you because I felt that we worked together fairly collaboratively. And I think that that's a really great system to kind of get through those little blind spots that we may have. So thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was absolutely wonderful.
Yay, thank wonderful.
You. Big peanut geeky to you too, Arvina Martin, of Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin, for stepping up and guest hosting for Robert Pilot tonight. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Heather Bailey, Preservation Planner, City of Madison, Wisconsin. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
are listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.